Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast.
Hello, this is Jennifer Sparrow. I'm joined for a conversation today with the president and CEO for the Association for Authentic Experiential and Evidence-Based Learning, Trent Batson. Thanks for joining us today, Trent.
Thank you, Jennifer. Glad to be here.
E-portfolios seem to be a tremendous amount of work for the institution. Are they worth it?
That's quite a question. I guess that has a couple of different ways you could respond to that. What we have found over the years is that people who just have it as an added-on requirement, in other words, you still do testing and you still run the course the same way as always, but you have an extra requirement to have an e-portfolio. We generally find that those initiatives don't last very long and that people are not really happy with it because all they see it as extra work, and it's not really rewarded in the final grade because the e-portfolio itself is not assessed. But we find generally that people succeed most when they, say, for example, take one whole degree program or like the Gen Ed program, mm-hmm. and they decide that the e-portfolio is somehow going to be built in. The phrase in Australia was, is the portfolio built in or is it bolted on? Mm-hmm. And we just are just referring to the bolted on model, which doesn't seem to work a whole lot. So the built-in is where the portfolio then becomes, in essence, the center of the course. The students are building their portfolio in that course for the whole semester, and the portfolio then is assessed at the end. So it's more an assessment based on the actual work that the student did, the changes that they made during the semester, the amount of learning that they acquired. It's based on this progressive model of actual evidence of work over a semester rather than just a final grade, which doesn't say a whole lot other than to the instructor who says, yes, I gave that person A because blah, 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 blah. But all the instructor's reasons are lost over time. So the portfolio retains a history of the work in the course. And if the portfolio is constructed well so that the artifacts are explained and are put in context and that, you know, it's like a rich archive of the actual work, then that, you know, over time provides great value for the student because it's not only getting good grades but also advancing your career for a long time. So, yes, when institutions decide to say, well, let's try with one particular program and then see how the technology works and see how faculty like it and how it works out in our general scheme of how our learning goals are being met and so forth, then it does seem, and I think it will become, a competitive advantage.
So we know that our students in K-12 education come through school without lots of authentic assessment, right? They're going through and getting standardized testing rather than that authentic assessment. Well, so how prepared are they to be, you know, good participants or partners in this learning process that e-portfolios allow us to have?
Yeah, that gets to the core, of course, why ABLE supports e-portfolios is one of the technologies that we see shifting the focus from teaching to learning. I think mm-hmm. everyone says, yes, we are trying to shift the traditional model of a teacher coming in and making a presentation and it being basically a treatment, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of behavioristic approach to education. So the e-portfolios then we see as an instrument to help transform education and transform teaching and learning so that the learner has more responsibility for their own learning and also more control and more sense of ownership. And in that general model, no, I don't think that most high school students are coming in prepared to take more incentive, more initiative. And because so many of the e-portfolio initiatives in K-12 have to some extent by necessity, because these students are not adults and they can't post things on the web as freely through the institution, at least, as college students can. So they, I think, ended up with e-portfolios being more aimed toward tracking and matching with standards and so forth. So that when I've talked to educators in K-12 who are interested in e-portfolios, they don't want it to be that way. Right. They want it to be opening up learning and, you know, opening up opportunities and giving students more control over their learning. But it's a greater challenge, K-12, really is.
Sure. What are the most important ways that portfolios have evolved over the past 2 years?
I think the one thing that really interests me is the trend towards selling to individuals. we have talked for a long time about e-portfolios as lifelong and life-wide. And it's something that people should have starting in grade school. But as long as they were so tied and the market and the business model was selling to the institution number of seats, and then the institution would then, in a sense, sponsor the e-portfolios on the campus, which pretty much tied it just to those 4 years or 6 years or whatever the student was enrolled at the campus. And the trend is slowly toward not only maintaining accounts after students leave campus, but even selling to them before they get to campus, so that someone who's 12 years old could buy an account with some of these companies and then just keep that. And I think that is a trend, is toward the e-portfolio being an open market product, general cultural, because learning is moving to the culture, you know.
Right.
I mean, learning is all over the place now. It's a huge, huge market. The demand for learning is almost unlimited. So one new company just started, one of our corporate sponsors, PathBright. They sell only to individuals. So they have said this is the wave of the future. That is their business model. We're going to sell to the American people. And so that I think, is something I've expected for a long time, that no one ever uses their LMS in their leisure time if they have a choice. They don't go to it for fun. And that's not true of e-portfolios. E-portfolio is like your personal scrapbook. So that does seem to be working out as we expected 5 or 6 years ago, that this was going to be a market that would dwarf the LMS market. It doesn't seem so right now, but there are about 20 companies in the world that are selling e-portfolios, and about 15 of those are selling only e-portfolios. So it is a growing market, and the number of students in higher education using e-portfolios, I think, has quadrupled in the last 2 years. Another interesting trend is the architecture to be open architecture, sharing functionality on the web. E-portfolios are becoming Web 2.0 native, some of the newer architectures. So you see a move toward the larger world, and it's a recognition that learning is not only going to occur inside the institution, but outside more and more, and that there's got to be some way to, you know, assess prior learning. And e-portfolios are doing that now. You are in an institution, you're enrolled, and then your work is kept in the e-portfolio. Then you drop out for 2 semesters, come back, but in those 2 semesters you kept the account going and you collected evidence of the work you did there, so that when you come back, you might get an extra 20 or 30 credits because you did work that then can be assessed by the institution as, all right, we're assessing prior learning. This looks like it's directly related to your major. It's good work. It's not something we might have assigned you to do anyway for an internship. So we're going to give you credit for 3 or 4 courses as a result of that.
I have 2 questions follow-up for you based on that answer. So this sounds similar to badging. So how do you see badging influencing or playing into the e-portfolio world?
Badging is very, very important for e-portfolios and vice versa. E-portfolio vendors are building in badge capabilities. And the idea is that badges can be seen as providing a perspective on student learning that does not exist now. Because what it does traditionally, and we hope it will continue to do so, is it extends peer review to students, to learners. So that, because increasingly we have students working on projects outside of class or in class, or they're doing an internship, or they're doing something service learning, something away from the campus or the physical classroom. And often what they're asked to do is to work in a group. And increasingly it's not just a group and there's one person does all the work and they get one grade, but increasingly there is each person has a specific deliverable within that project. And so in that case, the fellow students, the peers, are then the experts on how a particular person worked. And then that badge in the e-portfolio archive, in a sense, you could search for that badge to see certain kinds of work.
Sure.
So I see it as a potential way to organize the archive. The portfolio, in a sense, is associated with institutions, and so the badging will take on greater prestige and recognition because it's associated with the various places that the student was enrolled.
So the second part to that follow-up question was you mentioned the open nature of the tools that are coming up for any portfolios. We hear about WordPress and Blogger and different ways that are open and free that students can create their own e-portfolios. Do you see a movement away from vendor-driven solutions to more of these open solutions? And is that really dependent on what the ultimate goal of the institution is for the collection of those artifacts?
Yes, a lot of work that is e-portfolio related will be done by other technologies. It's like e-portfolios have a supply chain, too. I mean, how do you build the artifacts? How do you get the voice memos and the video? And it's a whole cluster of technologies that we're looking at.
I've heard that the hottest baby gift right now is to give parents the child's URL name. Do you see e-portfolios going down to a 5- and 6-year-old? Do you see the application there?
Well, they do right now. But it tends to be more digital storytelling. That's what young people are very good at, is, you know, telling the story of my vacation or my trip, or telling the story of my day at school, or telling the story of my day at the zoo. That's very accessible for young people. I mean, it seems almost as if humans are born with a storytelling gene, and that's been one of the most powerful ways to transmit human knowledge for hundreds of thousands of years, is through stories. I think that's the other side of what we were talking about earlier, the learner tracking and the analytics and standards is the digital storytelling movement. That's a very powerful initiative. And I mean, our own daughter got into college because she did a paper portfolio of her trip to South Africa. So I think that, just building a sense of your own being, and the being that you have in your portfolio is not the same as you are in person. This is another persona. And that constructing another persona is almost what we do in academia.
If you had a faculty member approach you today, Trent, and said, "You know what? I'm really interested in this e-portfolio thing, this idea. Where do I go to get started? What are some words of wisdom for that new faculty member or new administration looking at e-portfolios?"
Well, the obvious thing is ABLE.
Well, right.
We're a global nonprofit. A higher education professional association. We are also essentially the trade association for the e-portfolio business sector. ABLE has 5 conferences a year in the United States, 4 that are campus-based, Southeast, Northeast, Western, and Northwest. And we also have a bi-monthly, 2 times a month webinar series. We have the ABLE Learner that comes out 6 times a year. We take calls from people. We're still small enough that we can just talk to people who give us a call. But AACNU also has its annual meeting in January every year. AACNU has 1,300 higher education institutional members. Very large organization. They have decided that e-portfolios is the one technology that they want to dedicate themselves to. They have not had a history of being a technology, but they've been more higher education administration. And so they actually have this whole conference in January is about e-portfolios. Okay. So if someone is from an institution where they normally go to AACNU every year, this year they can expect a lot of information about e-portfolios. It's built into the whole conference. And then, of course, there are other organizations around the world. EPAC is a free site at Stanford, epac.org. That anyone who wants to contact me or Judy Batson, judybatson@me.com, either one of us can provide resources, answers, point people who know. I mean, we are the establishment, so we can put them in any direction they want.
We are the establishment.
Right. I know. I hate thinking that. What has my life come to? But
you are it. Thank you so much for your time today. Is there anything that you'd like to add, any closing thoughts for us about e-portfolios and the future, where we're going?
Well, I'm really very thankful to EDUCAUSE to have this interview series to begin with, and then also to invite me. EDUCAUSE has Northeast Regional, which is NERCOMP, very large and successful regional. And we are working on a way to partner much more closely with NERCOMP. So we think that we are aligned with ELI and with NERCOMP and with EDUCAUSE's interest in advancing learning. So I appreciate this chance to talk with you.
Great. Thank you very much, Trent. We appreciate your time. Have a good rest of your conference.
Thanks very much, Jennifer.
Thanks.